All right, here we go.
Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. You know, it's beginning to, you know, look a lot like zombie apocalypse. It's beginning to look a lot like zombie apocalypse. And you know what we're going to do? We got to be able to transact in the future. This is, you know, we're going to be talking a lot about Bitcoin today. In the first 2 hours, we're going to have Roger Ver in Tokyo. He's via Skype. We're going to be talking with him. And we also have Tuxavant. That is how we're going to refer to the gentleman that's on the phone. Now, I tell you, this is, we have, you know the culture's starting to shift when you get in the songs. You know what I mean? Here comes the songs. And I want to make sure that people understand that I am of the opinion that we are going into a future that is going to be a lot different than what we're, you know, when, you know, let me tell you how you know when something's going to end. When it's impossible for it to continue. It's a math thing. Now, it's numbers. We have such an overwhelming debt, overwhelming leveraging of the future a baby is not even born. You know, and then you go, oh, it's your debt. You were born in this debt. You got a debt, tax slave. Get in line. Got it on you. I mean, you know, I'm like, wow, just this attitude. How else are we going to fix? You know, I don't care. You're confusing me with someone who gives a crap. You know, the point is that you cannot morally take this in this enormous debt. I mean, just since 08, all of a sudden, you know, with Dr. Paul's efforts, you find out that the Fed, to the tune of $20+ trillion. I know it's 20, you know, sooner or later, you start getting double digits. Doesn't matter anymore. I remember they used to say a million here, a million there. Pretty soon you're talking real money. Billions or something. Trillions, trillions. You know what a trillion is? This is what I found out. It's a million, million. I go, wow. That's like, let me think. Let me do it on my fingers. That's a lot, okay? And that is like you're never going to pay it back. And they know, and they don't care. So they're debasing, and it's ramping up now. I mean, it's getting to where your U.S. dollars are going to be worthless. So we have already talked about it. Mark Victor, my partner in the Freedom Summit, and I, it looks like by mid-April, we're going to start getting real heavy on it here after the holidays. He had already started coming up on his own an idea that we need some kind of a freedom-oriented, libertarian merchant kind of thing. And I go, yep. We're along the same line. Let me tell you what's going on. I guarantee they're going to need to be able to take Bitcoin as one of the options. You know, dime cards, Bitcoin, gold, what, you know, anything but whatever. What do you call them? Nothing. Paper. So what I want to do is in the next hour or two, we're going to go ahead and get all our sound check and everything done up. Certainly whatever problems we got in this first segment because we're dealing with around the planet stuff. But I tell you, I am of the opinion, if we don't have some type of a currency immediately available, already set up, that we can quickly just overnight switch over to, because it's already ready. We need to, the infrastructure is getting ready. We already closed the loop. Can I, yes or no, take dollars, my cash, my money, my bank account, and wire it into a service to give me bitcoins that then I can purchase things and convert right back into precious metals or cash? Yes, we did it. You know, we got a couple months ago. We go, all right, you know, I take cash, I put it in. I got Bitcoin. I go Bitcoin down to Liberty. I spend them, I get silver. Done. Loop closed, as far as I'm concerned. Now, it's all about the speed and the safety and the security and the actual mechanism by which you do that. So, yes, we've proved, yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can get off the Fed. Okay? But what's the best way to do it? I mean, the first thing is, hey, man, you may be able to use the big, giant, humongous, expensive icebreaker to make it to the South Pole and go busting through the ice. And you and I made it. Looks like we made it. Yeah, okay, yes, yeah, it's been December 21st. Okay, we made it. So now we got to actually start worrying about living life here on the planet because looks like we're just going to be keeping sticking around and whatnot. So what we do is we go, all right, now what's the best way? I do a ground effect craft, hovercraft, whatever, and I just zoom right over it and go, how about we do that? How about a suborbital launch, and boom, I just parachute down where I wanted to go, and I'm there in 30 minutes. You know, okay, we got there. Now, what's the best way of doing it? Well, we need to talk to these guys. We got to find out. Well, let's first go ahead and meet Roger Ver. Now, he's a longtime voluntarist, a full-time Bitcoin advocate, and he became aware of it in 2010, and all of a sudden he goes, oh, I see the light. Okay, now, Roger Ver, tell me. Why did you see the light? What was so important about this? How are you going to save the planet with this?
Well, one of the things that caught my attention the most with Bitcoin is that it's mathematically impossible to counterfeit or inflate them. And I'm definitely opposed to all the wars that are going around the world. And most of those wars are paid for by governments inflating their currency. And with Bitcoin, that would be a mathematical impossibility. And that was one of the things that really attracted it to me. Because if everyone starts using this, governments will no longer be able to inflate the currency that people are using, and they won't be able to pay for these wars that are all over the world. And that was one of the things that was the most attractive to me.
No, I can see that being a big benefit. Now, I got another question. I mean, immediately right off, you know, things like we track on Freedom's Phoenix a lot of things. One of them is quantum computing. And once you start hitting into a whole nother, it's a game changer, man. I mean, it's going to be to where, we take all your numbers and we eat them for breakfast. Okay, so this is totally dependent on the ability not to hack the blockchain, that you can't, that the numbers are so big and it takes so much computation that you are not going to be able to infiltrate the chain and say, oh, all your money in one big giant chain, okay, it's mine now. Because that's what they're doing with the stock market. You know, they socially and economically engineer you into the point to where you put all your goodies into one thing. It's a stock market. It's in a money market. It's in your pension plan. It's in this. It's in that. Your IRA, your 401k. And it's all, is everybody in now? Everybody all in? You all in? Okay, it's ours now. Then they go, stock market's back up 13,000. You all in again? Okay, that's ours too. So it was Bitcoin. It's I see it as a really good currency. But is it a storage of wealth? I mean, do I keep it over in silver over here and I go in and out and there's cost? Because when I do that, I'm paying, you know, up to, you know, almost 4% for me to be able just to get into Bitcoin, you know, and whatever percentage to get out. And I'm going, okay, well, I'm sure, you know, that'll go down with competition and so on. That's cool. You know, and you don't have a bunch of bank fees and all this other stuff. But what you do have is you got math. And if they break this math, they're going to say, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't get it. Oh, all the blockchain is mine now. Okay, so I'm just going, then there's competing ones and there's different. So you trust in the cryptography under today's computation power? Are you worried about future capacity with quantum computing?
No, because there's such a thing as quantum computing based encryption. Ooh. And they can change the algorithm that Bitcoin Network uses to take advantage of that if that were to be the case. But I think we're still a fair number of years away from having to worry about any of that.
All right. Well, I'm just, you know, I mean, you don't worry about it until right up. You wake up one day and you go, wow, I should have worried about it yesterday. Okay.
I think we'll have a fair amount of warning that's coming down the line.
Okay. Well, here's your warning. Here it comes.
Thank you.
It's always math, man. I tell you, you know, I've been around long enough. You're 50 years old. You keep, you know, the things that are impossible until they're possible. And all of a sudden, the possibles, you know, keeps coming around a lot faster than we anticipate. So I'm going, okay, so we're going to talk about that very concern and what is the best way for you to store, use, trade, share, promote, be in the Bitcoin generation. Because this cryptography of currency, it keeps them from just making it up and killing people with it.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Don't need them. You know, there are so many other ways to travel. Open your mind. You know, we have so many things on, you know, the cover of this last month's e-zine is just, you know, a lot of the vehicles that are in there, you know, flare craft, ground effect craft, heavier than airships, you know, on and on and on. We go, look, this is we're at here now. I'm showing my sister visiting for the holidays. And I said, let me show you something. I go, you know, all this stuff that when we were growing up and kids and all that kind of, you have no idea what's coming. You know, private space stations in orbit. You know, you have Elon Musk now, the first stage. They just don't fall away and waste the engines and everything. They just reverse and land right back on the pad on the tail and say, you know, va con Dios to the rest of the spacecraft up there, and they use it again. You have Rocket Racing League. You have, you know, Elon Musk of PayPal going, oh, you know what I'm going to do with my gazillions? 80,000-person colony on Mars. Did you know that? FYI. You know? So there's so many things that are going to change. Materials. But at the root of every single transaction is the currency. How that is so important. I tell you, we watched Mankind, the History of Us thing on the History Channel. And what was the big giant change in commerce? All of a sudden, the world opened up. It was access to silver in South America. They went to the Incans. They said, ooh, we got us a bunch of silver. Guess what? We'd be trading. So, you know, here you have the hard assets, something of value. None of this, you know, king promises, bank says, you know, church, pinky swears, you know, none of that stuff matters anymore. If you got actual money, something that's worth something, that's of value. And that's the biggest criticism from the older generation, the guys I talk to, try and talk up, tell them about and how it's all to have Bitcoin. And they go, nah, you know, I need to hold touchy feely, man. There's difficulties in sending silver over, you know, encryption. Well, now they're starting to do credit cards based on grams of gold and this and that and so on. You still got to put it somewhere, and somebody's going to say they got it, and then there's a transaction that somebody's tracking or something. And I'm going, okay. I'm looking for the best. It doesn't have to be any one thing. It could be options. Tuxavant is a IT specialist in Las Vegas, Nevada here, and he's going to try and answer a lot of my questions. I'm 50-something years old. A lot of my friends are older, and I go to them. They got wealth, and you know, they doing transactions. I say, hey, man, you need to get a Bitcoin wallet of some type, and you got to, you know, start at least understanding this. It's not that hard. It's something you need to understand, because you may start moving things over, just like Roger Ver is saying, you know, hey, man, you know, quit funding the empire. So this is a Tuxavant, I need you to help me out here. What should I be telling my friends that are skeptical of something like Bitcoin?
Well, I mean, like Roger was saying, it's backed by math. It's completely open source, so it's verifiable that it does what it's advertised to do. The math behind it is what secures traditional banking security. So if there's a failure, everything is going to fail. But just to touch on what you guys were talking about earlier, it is very easily extensible. So if part of the cryptography fails, or if it starts, we start seeing that there's some vulnerabilities, it would be relatively easy to implement a new cryptography foundation for Bitcoin to operate on.
And you can integrate the old chain, so everybody's value that has in still works. So they got to transfer or what?
Absolutely, yeah. If the encryption algorithms were to change, then people would probably be required to spend their money to a different Bitcoin address that would be using this new cryptography.
Okay, now that's and they could a competition. It could be, you know, not Bitcoin bits, you know, or whatever the heck, you know, Fred's encryption. I mean, it's all really branding, you know. What if it works, and it's everybody go, okay, we do that when it works. Till it doesn't work, we go to this guy. So I can see there's going to be a sooner or later, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but there's going to be a competition for pick me, and what should I be looking for to make the pick?
That's hard to say at this point because we don't know what the problems are going to be. That's a real difficult question to answer.
Well, I mean, you know, that's one thing that I give you an example. It's when you have the a glass sliding door, you know, and I always called it, when I was a kid, I called it Arcadia door. You know, I don't know, because it's Arcadia door. It's a sliding glass door. What I didn't know is Arcadia was not the name of the door. It was the brand of people that made a glass sliding door. So you just go, oh, it's Arcadia door. It's like saying, you know, every car is a Ford, you know. So I'm sure. Going, okay. So Bitcoin, you know, is not the name of the actual encryption. Like you say, banks use the encryption. It's just a certain one. You know, and it's the same method that, you know, other encryption. So it's been tried and true and so on. But it rose quickly to be the one. As I do more research, I find there are others. Heck, there are other countries that even, you know, dabbling in this stuff. You got France coming out, you know, saying, hey, man, we'll work out some kind of deal where we can deposit Bitcoins. We got United Nations freaking out and IMF and everybody else saying, hey, man, this Bitcoin thing is, you know, bad, you know, because it works, because it's bad. And then you got Schumer starting to, you know, have his little say. We got to stop encryption to be able to buy, you know, stuff that isn't supervised by the man because, you know, everything that you do needs to be categorized and put in a file somewhere. So I'm going, I see all of this. We're at the early stages, would you say, Tuxavant? I mean, I'm, or is it more mature than, say, it's at the beginning? Or are we just at the end of the beginning? I mean, where are we at in the development and incorporation of this into our lives?
Yeah, we're definitely at the early adopter stage and early development. I would say we're probably like midway through the early adoption phase. Development is ramping up. There's hundreds of, probably thousands of developers that are creating new services and software built on top of Bitcoin. Every day there's new services coming online, getting advertised.
Well, what's needed? Well, I mean, what do I need to get this to be no longer an early adoption? This Christmas, I swear, I saw 50-inch plasma TVs for $549 or some stupid thing like that, or $349 or something. It was, you know, I go, add a zero. That's what I remember it used to be. I mean, it was $5,000-$6,000 just a few years ago. All of a sudden, it's down to 10% of that. And I'm going, wow, that's some quick adoption. So you're talking about early adoption. I'm going, what kind of developments do we even need? What are we looking for? Why are we not doing it now? I've used it.
Completely agree with you. My 11-year-old daughter accepts Bitcoin for her allowance, and my 70-year-old mother just bought a 32-inch TV on BitcoinStore.com with her Bitcoins that she received for Christmas. So I think we're there. It's just a matter of people like testing the waters and experimenting with it.
Oh, did you hear that? BitcoinStore.com. Where's my browser going right now? BitcoinStore.com. I can buy TVs and stuff. Oh, man, everybody needs to go check it out. BitcoinStore.com. Push the button to see what's happening. I got a store. I got Bitcoin store. I go spend some Bitcoin. And what happens when it goes to Amazon?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, we are bringing you experts from Las Vegas, Nevada, and Japan. Japan. You know, technology, Skype, man, I tell you, you know, everything changed. The entire world has changed. I tell you, you know, I've looked at the world from, you know, just being around a young activist from the late 80s going through. I could see the power of, ooh, get her own printing press. Ooh, fax trees. Ooh, email. Ho, the man is so screwed. Oh, and when they start doing video, oh, it's all over. It's all over. It's not how grainy your, you know, live video is, or whether you had a camera crew there in HD or not. It's whether you can depict the truth of a situation. All of a sudden, 2005, everything changed. Then it's like all that crystallized in support of a philosophy that was, you know, best represented by Dr. Paul. Just like, you know, this leave me aloneism thing, which he made it very clear how powerful money is. He's going, look, it's both sides of every transaction. You know, and somebody's getting their cut. And somebody's devaluing, you don't even have to see it happen just by them just printing more. They're devaluing what you're holding, and they get first crack at it. You know, the Fed did it. Did what? Printed money and bought gold with it? I mean, you know, how complicated is that? They go, oh, thanks for playing. Let's go buy some hard assets. Well, you know, all that money out there, it's going to come home. Everybody's going, you know what? We don't need the dollar no more. We're going to do whatever the heck else. And it'll happen overnight. It'll all of a sudden just boom. You'll wake up, it'll be Monday morning, you go, what just happened? What happened? How am I going to go buy, you know, anything? So here in Arizona, we have big private farmers markets. We have a lot of infrastructure in with the libertarians and the progressives. Not so much the neocons. They're pretty much counting on somebody to give them a corporate welfare check. But, you know, a lot of people are going, man, we just got to worry about this feeding thing, you know? All right. So here we have Bitcoin Store. You can start, you know, putting stuff up there. He's telling me about another thing, BitMint, to where you can, it's kind of like eBay, you know, BitMint. You can just go put your own stuff up there and you take Bitcoin. Well, somebody's going to start bitching, whining, moaning. You know you made it when the IRS comes visiting, okay? So let's go ahead and talk to Roger about that. Now, Roger, tell me about Bitcoin Store. What is your goal? What is your method? How do you work with other people like us? We have Freedom's Phoenix. You know, we're going to be, you know, I got all this banner space. I mean, it's going to be all about me. I'm just going to be me, because I can make more money promoting my own stuff than I am trying to, you know, help everybody else all the time, unless, you know, somehow I get some kind of cut. We're working at it. How are you going to work with me? What's Bitcoin Store going to do for everybody?
Well, I should probably start by explaining what Bitcoin Store is. And BitcoinStore.com, I've partnered with the largest consumer electronics distributor in the entire world. And I have more than 500,000 products for sale up on BitcoinStore.com. And because Bitcoin Store only accepts Bitcoin as a payment, I don't have to pay the credit card companies any of their fees. I don't have to worry about their chargebacks or credit card fraud or anything like that. So because of that, I'm actually able to undercut websites like Amazon.com or Newegg.com or Buy.com on the majority of the items on BitcoinStore.com. So if you're looking for things cheaper than anywhere else, Bitcoin Store is the right place to go. Literally, I spent the morning clicking around looking at different things. I didn't even realize we have, you know, household appliances like coffee makers and blenders and things like that. And I checked probably 20 or 30 of them this morning, and every single one I checked, we were cheaper than Amazon.com.
Well, how much cheaper? To see that happen. What are we talking about? How cheaper? I mean,
between
is it a couple
3
of dollars?
And 5% cheaper? It depends on the item. So there was some wine cooler thing. We were like $70 cheaper.
It needs to be enough cheaper so that the transaction cost of me converting from U.S. dollars into Bitcoin, if I don't have a revenue stream of Bitcoin, it has to be cheaper than, you know, the cost it takes me to get into Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's there's enough of a savings there where it can be worthwhile to do that, depending on the method in which you buy your Bitcoins.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, I mean, we proved that we could do it. I mean, it's just that once you can do it, well, then, you know, the next day somebody's got it. You can do it better, and you can do it cheaper, and you can do it faster, and you can do it. I mean, you know, the heck, I was just surprised and shocked and amazed and happy that you could even do it. Okay, so now let's talk about before I go to the Bitcoin Store. I got to have. Let me think. Oh yeah, Bitcoins. Okay, so tell me about the various methods available to me to get converted into Bitcoins.
So if you have physical cash that's burning a hole in your pocket, you can go to bitinstant.com and then print up a deposit slip and then deposit that cash at any local Walmart or 7-Eleven or, you know, more than a million locations around the world at this point. And you can have Bitcoins sent to you within a, probably 20 minutes, and that costs around 4%. An even cheaper method at this point is through a website called Coinbase.com. You can link your bank account, if you're in the U.S., with Coinbase, and you can transfer your U.S. dollars for Bitcoins or your Bitcoins back into U.S. dollars, and they charge just 1% fee for that. And there's more and more sites that are coming online. If you want to buy a whole lot of Bitcoins, you can do a wire transfer to one of the popular Bitcoin exchanges, such as bitstamp.net or mountgox.com or btc-e.com, and you'll be only pay about a 0.5% fee to buy Bitcoins that way. So depending on the amount of Bitcoins you want, there's a number of different methods that you can use.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Texan. What were you saying?
Yeah, I just wanted to add one more onto that list. It's localbitcoins.com, and it's a great way to meet local Bitcoiners in your area and exchange Bitcoins, usually for free. Sometimes they'll charge, 1% or 3% or whatever, depending on who you meet. But it's a great way to meet local Bitcoiners and exchange Bitcoins for cash back and forth.
Okay, say that again. What is it?
Localbitcoins.com.
Okay, localbitcoins.com. Okay, now this has also become a culture thing.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, explain that to me. I mean, the guys, I remember, God, what was it? It was, I just saw we've been promoting 3D printing too. When that first started, from our perspective, it was a 15-year-old kid in 2005, 6, around in there, in his parents' basement that was homeschooled. He gets down and he starts making 3D printers. And what he was really doing is he was selling rapid prototyping of different things for people to make a one-off of whatever. So he built the 3D printer just so he could be a rapid prototyper. And then it just kind of exploded into. And there was a guy, he's up there, he's going, you know what? I'm at the first 3D printing extravaganza de la forum convention of whatever, and he's given a tour of all the different devices and different ways and methods of doing it. And he goes, I remember what this was like. This was like in the mid-80s when the computer industry is really starting to get into personal computers. He goes, I can feel it. And we saw what happened there. Well, here it comes with the 3D printing. Now, if you can have the same kind of a culture with the early adopters and the techno-geeky guys and the different services and the software, it is foundational, fundamental to an entire, I would think it's nothing less than there is the humanity before Bitcoin and humanity after. I mean, it's really one of those signposts in human history that it takes and democratizes every single transaction on both sides forever, for the first time, cutting out the bankers that have ruled governments and humanity for millennia. And I'm going, wow. I don't underestimate what this does. I do understand. I just need to make sure that I can navigate it. I can not only make use of it, but you really know you understand something enough when you can explain it to someone else. And I have not been able to get past some of the criticisms of people that I respect their opinion. So when we come back, we're going to start getting into a bunch of, I'm pulling up all these sites, okay? I have used BitInstant. It worked. I get money. I say, I want to put money into Bitcoins. What do? I go here and I say, hey, I want to put money into Bitcoins. And they go, fine. Here's your transaction wire number, whatever you want to do it. You want to go to the bank here? You want to go to MoneyGram? You want to go to CVS Pharmacy? You want to go to Walmart? Boom, done. Done. The answer is always yes. It's just how much. Well, now we have Bitcoin Store.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From?
I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied. I don't need.
Yeah, we want to break free. I'll tell you one of the ways to break. What is the biggest way that people are motivated? I mean, I don't know, pain, is always a good one. They got that waterboarding thing going on, and it's just incentive, carrot and stick. I mean, it's like it's always been, and where's the carrot? I don't know, you know, the least amount of pain, most amount of pleasure, that kind of stuff, you know. But in every single transaction, whether you're visiting your favorite brothel or you're going to go buy food or something, I mean, it's always in some kind of currency. Well, people that understand, and certainly through the last few years of the Lovelution, they became big time aware of the role that money has played, to the point that it never was an issue before. And that's where we can really thank the Austrian economist and Dr. Paul in particular, just bringing it, hey, next generation, let me tell you what's going on. Yeah, blah, 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 all these other issues and stuff that are going on, and divide and conquer and separate, and you got, you know, all kinds of different kinds of an American, and you got all kinds of different kinds of people, and you're segmented and chopped up and sliced and diced into whatever. You know, guess what? We all spend money. We all have an impact. It's called wallet voting. In 2003, I got the domain wallet voting. Why? Because I knew it was going to come to this. Yeah, of course, I never knew about Bitcoin, whatever. It doesn't matter. I knew it was going to be, you know, I got this, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you because I want what you got more than what I got. And you go, oh, I want what you got more than what I got. Boom, transaction, everybody's happy. All right? It's going to be the power of the purse. It always has been, which is why the bad guys position themselves in taking advantage of it. Bitcoin's different. Bitcoin is just, hey, man, it's math. Here I am. Anyone, you know, trade and doing kind of whatever in peace. And the way they set it up, I understand. But who else understands it? What kind of people understand it? Where does this understanding come from? What kind of future are they built? And who's doing it? What kind of people are doing this? Who wants to help me out with this in this culture, this community that's being created? Tell me about that. You know, I got, you know, Tuxavant in Las Vegas, Nevada. I got Roger Ver is in Japan. You know, now Roger, Tuxavant, which one of you has got the best story? Help me out.
I got one for you.
Who's this?
This is Tuxavant.
Tuxavant.
In 2010, I found out about Bitcoins, and I brought it home to my kid to it was a computer project for home. So we installed the program, and we were mining on our computer, and we were creating, securing transactions on the network, and in reward for that, we were getting inflation money. So anyway, we got these Bitcoins, and we were collecting them, and they were worth about 6 cents a piece on the exchange mtgox.com, mtgox.com. And, you know, it was novel. I looked into the cryptography. It was kind of interesting, and so eventually, a couple months later, one of my friends called me up and he's like, "Hey, dude, can you loan me some Bitcoins? I can't make rent. I need some cash." And I'm like, "Man, I would love to help you out, but I don't have that many Bitcoins. They're only worth like 6 cents a piece." And he's like, "No. Go check out the exchange. They're worth a dollar now." And I was flabbergasted. I was like, "Holy cow!" So I sent him 250 Bitcoins. And a couple weeks later, he turned them into cash at the exchange, paid his rent, mined some more Bitcoins, and sent back the $250 worth of Bitcoins back to me within a couple of weeks. And it was just a gigantic light bulb had clicked, like, oh my gosh, this works. And that was like the beginning of the of the end for me and Bitcoin. It was, well, actually it was the other way around, but I was just super, super excited about Bitcoin and what it could do for the future and humanity after that point.
Well, who are the people that even, is it just a young thing? Is it open to new idea? Go, yeah, you know, the Fed sucks and, you know, is there something else? Or they just, it's cool, it worked, I did it just because I could. I mean, you know, what is the motivation for people to get into Bitcoin? I mean, it's not, I don't understand what...
I believe it's libertarian-based. Most of the people that are into this are crypto-anarchists and libertarians, but it is growing, rapidly growing to other aspects or other groups in society, like my 11-year-old kid now accepts it, and my 70-year-old grandmother accepts it. In the beginning, one of the biggest problems for Bitcoin has been adoption, like where can I spend these things? And for me, I just never let that be a problem for me, and I started networking with friends on the internet, my Facebook friends, and it got to the point where, like since last year, I've spent thousands of dollars worth of Bitcoins just in my social networks. Like if I want something, I'll go and see if it's on Amazon, and I'll ask one of my friends, hey, here's a, I set up a wish list with things that I want. If you want to use your credit card to buy these things for me, I'll pay you in bitcoins. And then stuff just shows up at my door, and I've bought gun parts, I've bought motorcycle parts, I've paid for hotel rooms for conferences that I needed to attend. And if you make your social network happen, you can do this without merchants, but I would prefer merchants.
That's the early signs of here we go. And then, here we go to Roger with Bitcoin Store in English, doing a big, giant, humongous, distributor of electronics and so on. He's got it going on here, and he's in Japan. All right, Roger, why are you in Japan?
That's a little bit of a long story, but I've been in Japan for a while now, and I enjoy my life in Japan and don't really have much intention of going back to the U.S. But
so it's a girl.
I would like to mention about the when I first found out about Bitcoin in late 2010 and went on the Bitcoin forums, it felt like I had reached the promised land because I was surrounded by all these libertarian voluntarist types
that do the same
terminology. What money is and were so incredibly interested in Bitcoin. And it just, I couldn't have possibly been happier to be around, such a group of people. And those are definitely, that's what the early adopters of Bitcoin were.
Well,
all libertarian people.
Is that where Drew is finding you guys, is on these forums? Drew has been a big, giant marketer for you guys. He's going to get, oh, Ernie, man, you got to talk to these guys, this guy, this guy, this guy. And is it where it's happening is on these forums?
Yeah, there's a lot of Facebook groups, and then on BitcoinTalk.org is the main Bitcoin discussion forum. But lots and lots of people are starting local Facebook groups where everybody in a local area can talk about Bitcoins as well, and there's a lot of action there.
Okay, now the action. When you say the action, what is the action? I mean, let me give you an example. Here are the things that you can talk about. One, what are the banks saying? Two, what are the governments saying? Three, we don't care what they're saying. Four, what is it that we want? What do we need? What's left to do? What dominates the discussion more than anything else?
It's a little bit of all of that, but mostly I think it's people talking about what sort of new Bitcoin-based projects they're going to develop. And one of the things that most of the early adopters of Bitcoin like about it so much is that it doesn't really matter to anywhere near as much of an extent as it would normally what the regulators think or what the governments think or what the monetary regulations think.
Because you will Bitcoin respect my authority! They don't like being ignored, and that's exactly what's happening. They're just being bypassed. This encryption, this system, this method is like a wooden stake over the chest of the count. And you're already tapping the mallet and getting yourself a nice penetration there. You go take a big giant swing on this Bitcoin thing, you could upset the apple cart for central banking like forever. In a day. This will be an overnight thing when it, as you guys develop this, as this is done, you guys see the tsunami that's coming?
And that's why we're working as hard and as quickly as we possibly can every day to make change the world for the better sooner rather than later. And that's what Bitcoin's going
to
do.
Okay, well, what is the real threat to you guys? A Mossad guy walks up and, 22 to the head? Or you guys just, they don't care. I don't think you guys realize what a threat this is to the status quo.
I realize, and that's why I've hardly been able to sleep for the last couple of years now, because I'm so excited about how this is going to change the world for the better, and it could potentially make it so the Assad guy isn't able to collect a paycheck anymore.
Yeah. Tex Avant, what's your opinion, man?
I absolutely agree with you that this will change the world. This genie is out of the cage now, and because of the decentralized nature of Bitcoin, there is no central person that you can go and shoot in the head. It's all of us now.
Ah, see, good point. The more they resist, the more it brings attention, the more it gets adopted, the more it's understood, the more. More, 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 more. And it's been happening. Anybody buying a record store now? Going to invest in Tower Records or anything? What happened? You get things turned to ones and zeros, it cuts out all the middlemen. Heck, we're the front man, the end man, the middle man, everybody is, it's called democratization, where the power goes down to the individual. I'm all about the power going to the individual, and you're able to declare your independence, because you're not dependent. Oh, they don't like that. More, a whole nother hour with Roger Ver, from Japan and talks about...
Studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare! Independence of me, Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, and make sure you go check out freedomsphoenixezine.com. And I think it was March of 12 that we did the Tron Babe. I mean, it was all about, you see the cover, it's very recognizable. And it was all about encryption. Privacy. And we're going to be getting into security and privacy at the top of the third hour. But I tell you, it's money. It's routing around. You can't see them doing it. And I remember the government freaking the F out when they had PGP, pretty good protection or pretty good privacy or whatever it was. Zimmerman, man, they charged him with munitions violation. You're exporting nuclear warheads or something because you're teaching people how to be encrypted. We can't see and read and do, and we got our clipper chip we want to put in every fax and every email and everything. We got everything. Oh, we don't need a warrant for it, by the way. And everything. But they're encrypted, damn it. You're not allowed. Bam! Slap you. You deliberately ducked. You're not allowed to get around us knowing being inside your head. That's their mentality. You're being free and stuff. Well, Bitcoin is like, you know, I spent my money. I got my stuff. And you don't get to say nothing about it. No, 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 no. So I'm going, okay. You know, my kids think my grandkids think the UPS guy is freaking Santa Claus. You know, you think he don't care what's in the box. He just delivers, man. Mail or me. Here you go. How the person wanted to send it to you and what you sent him to get it and you got it and they don't care. So we start having an entire culture built up around the concept of being able to just do transactions without the man in the middle. You know what I mean? The man, you know what the government is? They're just a gang with a flag. Man, they just, and they got their hand out. You know, I get my cut, you know, with their, you know, violin case, you know, with their, you know, machine gun in there. I'm just going, seriously, that's all you got is force and threat of force? That's your legitimacy, is you'll kick my ass if I don't do what you say? That's it. That's all you're basing this on. You know, you're just a king's men. You know, we might as well be wrecking Sherwood Forest, man. I go, wow. All right. So now we got, you know, new people coming in, and they're starting to get the attention. They may not understand the encryption and so on, like these guys, but they need to have some kind of a understanding that, you know, they're not going to get fleeced. So where do they start? Let's ask Roger in Japan. Roger, I'm early, not early adopting, but, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm ready to adopt. I'm willing to open up an account. I'm, you know, 62 years old. I'm thinking there's something. I went through this devaluation in what, or I'm, you know, 82, 89, a little kid went through World War II, went through devaluation in whatever country I came from, Zambia, whatever. And I'm going, you know what? I already seen this. I went three times with this in Argentina. I'm ready to kind of put a little bit over here. Where do they go first?
So I think the best place for new users to go and start setting up their first account would be www.blockchain.info. That's blockchain.info, info.
Okay, and then what am I going to find there? Why would I go there as opposed to anywhere else? Is there anywhere else? I mean, is that the only place? I mean, what do I do?
No, that's just one of many. If you go there, up on the top little mini bar, you'll see where it says wallet, and you'll click on wallet, and you can set up your first free Bitcoin wallet, and you can actually buy a couple of Bitcoins by text message from your phone to test it out. And there's also, if you want to test it out before actually setting up an account, you can click on try a demo account, and you can play with all the features that the website has and get to learn how everything works before you actually open an account.
Okay, now I'm going to blockchain and I'm opening up an account. Well, to open it up, I got to have a Bitcoin. And what am I doing?
Well, you can open an account even if you don't have any Bitcoins yet. And then once you've made an account there, you can deposit cash at your local convenience store to buy Bitcoins. You can buy a small amount of Bitcoins by text message from your cell phone. There's a number of different options depending on which country in the world you're in.
Okay, now that's another thing. You know, this is not limited to a geographical, jurisdictional kind of thing. I mean, it's ones and zeros on the internet, right?
Bitcoin is worldwide. You could potentially send and receive money with somebody in North Korea or Iran if they have the internet.
Oh, they do. You got all kinds of fans, I'm sure. Now, now, what kind of, you know, let's ask Tux Event that, you know. I want Roger to weigh in on this too, but, you know, where's your enemies? I mean, who are the people that would be, I mean, do you feel them? Is there a shadow that's breathing on your neck? I mean, is there somebody that's none too happy about this? I mean, what's your opposition?
Wow, I don't really think about that when I'm spending my Bitcoins.
In the community. I mean, in the process. As individuals, encryption sending out, they're not the ones that they're going to go after. They're going to go after, let's go ahead and put that to Roger, because they're going to go after, BitStore. They're going to say, oh, no, you're not allowed because we got a big gun and we just said.
Yeah, and ultimately, if they want to, they can, but I'm doing my very best to follow all their dictates and all their laws and rules and pay them all the money that they demand.
Like what?
Not because I owe it to them, but because they'll lock me in a cage if I don't.
Well, there's laws and demands, and what are they? I don't even know what they – I give you an example. We go to Liberty Precious Metals Coins in Scottsdale. We wanted to be able to buy silver with Bitcoin, and once I got silver, you might as well be cash, okay? So I'm going, okay, so how do they – keep track of that in their accounting? Well,
merchants are required to report their earnings. Like if they do cash, if they do credit cards, whatever, they're required to submit their sales to pay their taxes. It's no different with Bitcoin, but there is, because of the non-competing currency laws, basically they have to report. If they store Bitcoins rather than immediately convert them into dollars at the point of sale, they have to report capital gains and loss on when they do exchange the Bitcoins that they earned through sales.
Okay, now that's where, you know, we thought about it, and what they did is they had a service camera, which one we were working
BitPay.
With
BitPay.com.
Yeah, BitPay. So BitPay, yeah, was it Anthony, right? So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so BitPay gave them the ability, okay, I've taken the Bitcoin. Well, immediately it just went through, converted to dollars, and they report the dollars. Right.
Yeah, the merchant doesn't have to know anything about Bitcoin. At the point of sale, the Bitcoins are converted into dollars, and then at the end of the night, all of the daily receipts are ACH transferred to their bank account. So even the accountant doesn't need to know anything about Bitcoin.
See, that is interesting right there. That was another point of this that we wanted to demonstrate, that yes, you can operate just like you always have, and if you want to make sure the man gets, you got a brick and mortar somewhere and there's a guy with a clipboard and, you know, and the shiny badge and the hat and always the available, backed up by somebody with a gun, and says you owe us, you go, hey man, I did it right. I don't have Bitcoin. What are you talking about? I don't even know. You know, it came through, it's a cash transaction. So
absolutely.
You know, this is, but you have your store. So BitStore, I mean, you're Bitcoin Army, and we're going in there. Does somebody want to cut us something? I mean, where do you – and what country are you doing it in? International? I mean, there's so many questions because you are actually doing it. You're the Amazon of Bitcoin. Now what?
Yeah, well, I have a previous business based in Silicon Valley, California. And Bitcoin Store is run with all the other employees from the other business, and it'll basically – pay all the taxes and file all the paperwork that any other business based in California would be required to.
Ouch. I'd pick somewhere
else. Ouch.
I'd pick somewhere else on the planet. I mean, damn.
I'm looking into moving it somewhere offshore where hopefully I can.
Offshore. What happens when all of a sudden you get, you know, a big giant freedom ship out in the middle of the ocean and you're just commuting 20 miles out ocean and your 150 mile per hour flare craft to the coast of, and you got people from India living out in the ocean away from, and you're off grid. You're not allowed!
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Cartoons, they get dollar signs in their eyes. Well, it's just a Bitcoin logo. All right, all right, all right, all right, all right. I see where this is going. And if you look at history, you can see there's been other times, there's been other people. I mean, you just got to look to, you know, Liberty coins. You know, they went to the South silver and he went, you know, and Bonhoeffer, he had to call it a dollar and he's doinking the Fed and poking the bear in the chest because that's just their nature, you know. Well, Bitcoin's not really doing that. I mean, probably to greater effect, but it's not, they're not even calling it a dollar. It's not, you know, on their grid. They're not, they don't care. You know, this is a whole different thing. So we're talking about, I go in there as an individual and I want to start playing. All right. So what do? I take my money. I go to bitinstant.com. I go in there and I say, hey, you know, I got this amount of money. I did it. I went up and I said, okay, fill out. And it says, where's the closest, where you want to go? Okay, I'll go to my bank. Where's the closest? I pick this branch. It has it all up there. I print it out. It gives me a map to it. It says, all right, go down the road here, turn left, turn right. Boom, there you are. I walked into the front and I said, okay, I want $200 in bitcoins. And they gave me the printout and I go there and a transaction wire it to here. I walk in. I go up to the teller and I say, all right, here's this piece of paper I'm supposed to hear. You know, and what I, that'd be $201.35. Okay, so $1.35 went to somebody, you know, for whatever. So I give her the money. She takes, she transfers, done. I go, that's it? No ID? You know, no fingerprint? No DNA sample? You don't want no name, no ID, nothing? No. Oh, well, it's just deposit money. Oh, you know, heavens, Murgatroyd, we would never charge for that. I'm going, yeah, wait till there's 300 guys in line behind me, and I guarantee there's a charge. Okay? So, obviously, she was young, and I'm going, yeah, where you been? And they go, oh, no, we would never charge for that. You know, how many times I heard that, and then all of a sudden I got some service I'm getting charged for. But as of now, as at that time, there was no charge for me to go into a bank, give them cash, and it credit me the bitcoins. But it was 3.99%. For me to be able to turn cash into Bitcoin. So with $201.30 whatever cents, I got, I don't know, it was like $192, $93 and something. Okay. So I had $92 and whatever. And I got that in Bitcoin. Okay. So now I'm Bitcoin. I can start trading Bitcoin and go up and down and trade and eBay and whatever the heck I do. I go to the store and whatever. And I have what? Well, I can get more Bitcoins, less, whatever. I can start spending. So we do. I went and bought some silver. All right. Well, that's cash as far as I'm concerned. So I'm going, all right. So now we're going into blockchain.info and I'm getting a new wallet. Now I got my wallet. What the heck does that mean? You know, Roger, go ahead and explain that to me. What I got my, what's a wallet? I put it in my pocket. What?
Nope. It's a virtual wallet that you can use to send and receive bitcoins that are money with anyone, anywhere in the entire world. And when you're sending bitcoins to and from someone, there's a, almost all the time, there's no fee. The times when there are a fee, it's less than a penny. So it's basically free to send and receive money with anyone, anywhere else in the entire world. And it's mathematically impossible for anyone to block you from sending or receiving that money. It's mathematically impossible for anyone to freeze your account. And if you're careful with the manner that you use them, you can do it anonymously as well.
And those transfers are non-reversible.
See, that's another thing, especially as a merchant. You know, once you do something, now, of course, people can complain, hey, man, he took my Bitcoin and didn't get my goodie, you know. So you got to have a trust thing, kind of like eBay. You know, this guy has done 273 transactions and is not a scumbag. You know, I needed some broken silicon wafers that I couldn't find freaking anywhere. I find Amazon. I go and I get it. $35 in. Oh, sorry. Hurricane Sandy. Life sucks. You know, so I got to deal with that. So what happens when you got a complaint or a problem with a merchant using Bitcoin? What do you do?
So I think Bitcoins will wind up being used when you trust the person that you're dealing with. So if you're buying something from Amazon.com or BitcoinStore.com or some merchant that you trust, you'll feel just fine paying them with Bitcoins. And when you're dealing with some shady site or somebody that you don't trust so much, you might want to pay with a credit card.
Okay. So this is, from a merchant standpoint, you're like, hey, man, I got mine. Go. And if you want to stay in business, of course, you want to fulfill your obligation. But this is, so there's a benefit there. And it helps with keeping the cost down stuff, too. What it sounds to me, coming from Silicon Valley, living in Japan, let's see, it was a female or a significant other that you worked with in Silicon Valley, and they went back to Japan, you went with them. Am I close?
That's pretty darn close.
Okay, yeah. So this is in Silicon Valley. You have employees, friends, whatever. You set this thing up, and you go, all right, we're going to do us a Bitcoin business. I see the future in this. So tell us about your business plan. Are you going to be Jeff Bezos and keep developing my space program for me?
Yeah, if it works out that way, I'll be just fine with that. I'm definitely interested in space exploration as well. But for now, my intent with BitcoinStore.com is to undercut Amazon and Newegg and Buy.com. And basically, by the fact that I'll be able to undercut them on everything they sell, it'll force them to have to adopt Bitcoin as well as a payment method in order to compete.
I know. I mean, that is where, is that, part of the plan? You go, na, 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 made you take them.
I love you, Roger.
That's part of the master plan, is to basically undercut all the other traditional big players and force them into having to accept Bitcoin in order to compete.
Oh.
And eventually, you'll probably see two different pricing tiers on sites like Amazon. There'll be the Bitcoin price, which is the cheapest, and then there'll be the credit card price, which will be a bit more. And then people will flock to want to buy it in Bitcoin so that they can save money.
Oh, man, that plan, too good. Somebody's got to nip it. Nip it in the bud. All right. So here comes, let's put it this way. Early adopter, you probably bought a bunch of the Bitcoins early on because you smart when they were like nothing cents a piece. And then you go, okay, I remember when I first got my first Bitcoin, I think it was like 89 cents or something. Now, what are they, $12, $13 or something?
Yeah, coming up on $13 and some change right now.
So I'm going, okay, I can see somebody that bought a bunch when they were nothing cents, and now they're up, and you're going, you know what? I have enough value in Bitcoin right now that I can go ahead and afford to create competition to Amazon and all this stuff just so that they adopt it. That alone would have an increase in the value of, it's worth it for me to create the competition for them to adopt it, to have an increase in the value of the Bitcoins. I will make my money not by the transaction profits in the Bitcoins, just by them adopting them. I'm going to be a wealthy sum bitch because I got a shitload of them. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud? Okay. So how close am I on that?
Well, my primary motivation in regards to Bitcoin is philosophical, and I'm really, really excited about all the ways in which they'll change the world for the better.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. You make a lot of money, though, right?
I won't lose any sleep if I wind up making a bunch of money along the way in the way you just described.
Peace.
The early adopters have a lot of risk developing stuff for Bitcoin, investing in business and stuff like that. So it's not all upside. There are risks. I look at it as no different than people investing in IPOs for corporations.
It seems to me that barring some weird Lord knows what, that this is a much safer, better bet than a lot of venture capitalist stuff on other things. And
Bitcoin's up 500% since last year.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. The venture capitalists in this, they're people, going... Give us some. Here's some money. Give us some. We want some. We want to get in. We want it. Yeah, well, what's your philosophy?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Cue reset and done. All your fiat inflate to me on the sun. But no more, because now there's a better one. And its properties perform better than all the rest of.
Of Tuck Savant singing odes to Bitcoin. And Satoshi, I guess, is a reference to the guy that created Bitcoin, right?
That's correct. That was his pseudonym when he published Bitcoin.
Okay, so this is, let's talk a little bit about the backgrounds here. Let's get back to Roger. Okay, Roger, you already knew what you needed to do in order to incorporate Bitcoins into a business model that then you could not only make money from, but, you know, build it up to somebody, either give you a gazillion dollars to buy it, or at least force them into competition, which is really kind of, you know, one of your, you know, subterranean goals anyway. So I'm, you know, tell us about your background and how that facilitates the expansion of Bitcoin.
So my background is I started a company called memorydealers.com in Silicon Valley well over a decade ago, and still have run that out of Silicon Valley and have a small office here in Tokyo as well. And then with the staff and employees that I have with that and the knowledge and, you know, resources available because of that, I was able to start Bitcoin Store and kind of already knew what needed to be done and had the contacts in order to make that happen. And that's coming along. There's three people working on it full time. It's still in beta, but it's coming along quickly, and within another couple of weeks or a month or two, I think it'll really be ready for prime time.
Which means what? I mean, how are we going to promote this? How are we doing? Gimme. You got, you know,
I'm going to be advertising it all over the internet, and particularly on different price matching sites, where basically nobody else will be able to compete, because I won't be paying any of the credit card fees, and all the traditional sites will have to eat all the credit card fees, and I'll be able to undercut all of them because I don't have to deal with any of that with Bitcoin.
You know, I've seen this kind of thing before. It's always the Budweiser guy goes in and says, don't buy that microbrewer thing because the employees whiz into beer or something. You know, or they file suit on some patent thing, or you got to, I mean, there's always five gazillion little bags of tricks in their pocket. They do something. So one of the things is, what's the possibility of you having servers offshore? Is that been blipping around in anybody's head?
Yeah, that's next on the list of things to check. Right now I need to get the site up and running smoothly and all the different things configured properly. And then at that point, I'll focus a little bit more on the actual corporate and legal structure of the business itself.
So we're, you know, head down, plow activists, make it go worse first, and we'll worry about other crap later. And, you know, which is cool. You know, I don't have a problem with that. You know, Tuxavant, you know, you sound young, but you're in your 40s. That means, and this daughter, she's probably not five. So, I mean, you know, how old is your daughter singing that song?
She's 11 years old.
Really? Yeah. Wow, that sounds like a homeschool, man. So her involvement in, seriously, she's 11-year-old singing that song.
Yep. We had a good engineer on that, making that.
Very cool. Well, that's cool. You know, this is so it's really an activist community focused on one. You know, do you guys, as you're in your forum and so on, are you really you talk about the true cultural paradigm shifting efforts that you have? I mean, does everybody there kind of realize what's going on?
Absolutely. It's very exciting to think about the change and innovation that can happen from this. There's because of the extensibility of Bitcoin, there are things that are being just thought of right now that will be developed in the future that are extremely exciting, like smart property. There's some like two-party escrow stuff being developed right now. It's just unbelievable the amount of innovation that's going to be coming forth in just a little bit.
You know, I wrote an article, when was it? Probably, I used to be on the local radio stations here morning, and I used to do a column and all that kind of stuff. And I started to realize that the archive, the internet, I was getting, you know, gazillion times more listeners on the internet than I was in the Terran radio. So it just opened up a much larger, a whole different perspective on how you see your audience. I go, look, man, you guys get all excited about this little number of people. You know, I go, that don't mean nothing. Once you open it up to the internet, everybody, heck, even with Google translators, we translate Freedom's Phoenix into 30-something languages. So I'm going, look, we got a Haria Phoenix as our Arabic Facebook and Twitter in Arabic. I mean, the last couple of days, I go, wow, all of a sudden our Haria Phoenix just shot up. I'm like, what happened in the Middle East? There was some translator break that we had in the code and everything, so they were going over to a different area. And I go, oh, so there's that many people. Okay, so this is a worldwide thing. I see it like you guys do, but The one thing that I don't think I'm hearing enough about is the potential damage you're doing the big, the bad, the all-encompassing, we kick ass and taking whatever and you're just done, guys, the central bankers. So
it's
you're
going to be a tough job for them. Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer network across the internet, which was created by DARPANET to route around damage. It's going to be a tough job, and because there's no central authority that accounts can be seized or whatever, I think it's a race that they're going to lose.
Well,
that's
maybe
why we're not even worried about it. Is it would just be so incredibly difficult for them to do anything about it. About the only way they could actually stop Bitcoin would be to shut down the entire internet in the entire world. And even if they tried to do that, even people that had never even heard of Bitcoin would instantly be rioting in the streets. And
it's
got to
be something else. It's got to be a PR thing, which all again would backfire. It's got to be, Al-Qaeda uses Bitcoins. It's a national defense thing. And this is why libertarian philosophy has always been the possession of anything is not a crime. Maybe evidence of a crime, but it's not a crime. Yeah, but what about child pornography? Evidence of a crime. I mean, the crime is not possession. The crime is, and the reason that you take that position is for just this kind of thing. Just the possession of Bitcoins, they will try and make a crime. And they're going to go, you use Bitcoins, crime, national defense. And
here's the problem with that, is that ultimately the possession of Bitcoins is information that you can keep in your brain. I mean, it literally comes down to that.
Seriously, you think the government's not going to lay claim to what's in your brain? Seriously, I mean,
I can store Bitcoins in a Bitcoin key that was generated from a passphrase in my brain, walk around to any place in the world and log into the internet and reclaim or spend that money. That's where we're at right now.
Okay, well, they want the passport. You got to have biometric identification, iris scan to even sit at a keyboard.
That's fine. I'll present my documents to cross a border, or I'll get on a boat and swim across it, and I can take my money with me. And even if they catch me, they can't take the information from my brain.
Okay, so you guys have discussed this. I mean, you're starting to see where this is. Wow. Okay. So now we're in the future. It's 5 years from now. Bitcoin is being adopted by, you're starting to be able to convert on PayPal and Amazon. You have countries starting to incorporate it into their laws. If it's even necessary, they'll try and jump at the head of the parade. You got Central Bank de la Bitcoin out of whatever. You got, all kinds of different services. What's the world going to look like as we go through in the future? When we come back after this break, that's what we'll focus on. Let's skip to the end. Our life is going to be changed, better, or what, based on this capacity to have anonymous transactions that are not traceable, that are immediately credited to a merchant, and someone that spends the Bitcoin, nobody knows who they are. So I'm going, wow, talk about the problems with 3D printing of guns. Then you have 7-year-olds making them and shipping them to guys in Somalia. Cool.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Simple. I declare my independence. See how easy it was? No government form. You're doing the Bitcoin thing. You don't need a government form. You might need a retina scan. But, I really am much more optimistic about this in the long run. Let me tell you who are going to be the people that are going to be on the front lines. It's really not going to be the Bitcoin user. It's going to be where they congregate to use. It's going to be stores. It's going to be people that promote. It's going to be, I put a big giant banner out on top of my email dispatch to my thousands of subscribers, and I say, hey, go over and use this guy and whatever and everything. You're a prophesizer, man. You promote. You're server just got, kind of, we don't like you. Now, man, I've been through this so many times over the years. There has been all kinds of mess. But what does it do? It amps up our security. We limit, you know, kind of the ability to do, DDoS attacks. We kind of, yada, 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 yada. You know, there is always a battle for freedom that's going on behind the scenes. Garen freaking Tia, and if you don't think so, you haven't been around long enough. So I'm going, all right. So here we go. Bitcoin has a natural kind of insulating effect because of what? Because it's anonymous. So they got to go find where you're at. Where are you at? The stores. What happens when Amazon says, all right, we give up, done, we got it, we got to adopt? And it's not like these guys there don't know about it. Heck, probably, 83.7% of the employees, have Bitcoins, So this is not a secret. What would be the hurdle that you consider the big win? When Amazon and PayPal, all these guys start to take Bitcoins, when they start to promote it, when they start to be attacked for having it, what is your bellwether? What's your goal? What's the bell that you're looking to ring?
I don't think there's any one particular step or one particular thing that we're waiting to have happen. It'll be if Amazon starts accepting Bitcoins, all sorts of other sites will as well. So there's not any one particular step that I think is crucial. It's everything as a whole.
Well, one thing they did, all of a sudden now, just now, in I give you this. In June 2002, I filed an initiative that's still sitting there. We just filed a new activity report, finance, on it with the city of Phoenix. And keep in mind, this is 10 years ago. It still sits. It's an open file. I'm just waiting. A city charter change saying that you cannot charge a transaction fee on the internet for internet transactions. They go, oh, we never do that. We don't have that. Ernie, why are you doing that? We're not. I go, yeah, yet. So that's kind of been holding them off. All of a sudden, what happened just this last year? Amazon's adding sales tax. So I'm going, wow, okay, so they're in with the man. They're doubled down. They got, not only do they, all of a sudden now we got taxes that we got to deal with this. You're getting rid of all the credit card fees. All of a sudden, they're going to be 10% out of competition. Right?
Yeah, I think traditional businesses, even if they're accepting Bitcoin, will still need to collect the sales taxes and the different things that are required so that the owners don't wind up in jail. But other interesting sites like BitMit.net or Craigslist, people can start buying and selling whatever they want with Bitcoins, and it'll be really, really hard for anybody to track down what's going on and what's happening with that.
Okay, so we have, a Bitcoin store coming online. It's up there now. At one time, you had to order at least $1,000 worth of stuff to do it because you're in beta and kind of testing and so on. And everybody's like, hey, man, and then you brought that down. Tell us about that time period that you were doing that and why you changed the policy.
Yeah, well, we're still working on the site. Like I said, there's three people full time working on it every day to improve it. And we're making good progress. Initially, we didn't want to get really too many orders to be distracted by. And then recently we removed that limit, and we actually got flooded with more orders than we wanted to deal with, to be honest. But now we have a pretty decent system in place, and we're steadily improving day by day and week by week. And I think we'll have a pretty darn strong competitor to traditional internet shopping sites in the very near future.
Okay, let me ask Tuxavant this. I am of the opinion that you cannot integrate and start and promote and have as part of our culture the Bitcoin fast enough. You can't go too fast. What you want to make sure you got it set up. Yeah, the encryption seems like it's good. You got other different services and how somebody would enter into the process and what wallet they get and all that kind of stuff. But I am of the opinion this needs to be promoted. You're at the point now, it's time to go hardcore. Boom, 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 boom. Do you guys have a plan for that, or is it pretty much developing the way you want?
There is no central piece of Bitcoin to do this type of promotion or marketing. It's literally individuals that are working on their own projects that, are bringing these projects into reality. Everything is being done at individuals' rates. But I agree with you that it will happen, and at some point there will be some global awareness, and you'll see a mass interest into Bitcoin, and it's inevitable. We're in the internet age, and that's how fast information travels.
I think it's going to be this year. I don't see it waiting until 14. I mean, seriously, do you guys see this kind of, oh, it kind of pedaling along and then kind of grows a little bit and the hockey stick won't happen for a year or two? I'm thinking here comes the hockey stick.
No, there's a number of really interesting charts over on blockchain.info, one of which is the number of people that have signed up for wallets on the website. And it took about a year for the site to get its first 50,000 users. It looks like it'll take about 1 month for it to get the next 50,000 users.
Yep.
So, and the graph there definitely looks like a hockey stick if you take a look at it.
You know, one thing, you know, Drew wanted to make sure I emphasized on here, he has notes, brain wallets. Tell me about that real quick.
Okay, so brain wallets are like, for anybody that's, you know, tactical in nature, that, you know, has a go bag for when, you know, bad stuff happens and you just grab the bag and go. Brain wallets, they kind of serve two purposes. One is they're offline, so they're absolutely secure if you create them properly. They're absolutely secure from malware because the keys that let you spend the Bitcoins are offline. The other aspect is this tactical Go wallet where you can store Bitcoins in your brain. You create a passphrase in your brain that can be used to generate a Bitcoin key. You spend money to that Bitcoin key, and anywhere you're at, you have access to this money. You know, if you're at work and a flood washes your house away, or you know something bad happens, you got to get across the border, whatever. You just go. You don't have
illegal.
To go and grab.
I just passed a law. I made that illegal. You're not allowed.
Okay.
Well, how effective would that be? I mean, think about it. I mean, that what you're talking about is exactly what they're passing all these laws to prevent. You're not allowed to take this much money. You're not allowed. Yeah, well, I don't need to. I go over. Did my brain make it over the line? Well, then I win. I got it with me. You know, and they're like, damn it.
Right.
You know, so we're going to pass a law or something. I mean, this is the point that I'm making. I remember where I was going this before and I lost track. I wrote an article. It was called Yellow Page Government. And the point that I was making is that, you know, I go into the phone book and I have the blue pages and it's all, and I go in there, all these departments of government, and all you get is an answering machine and nobody gives a crap and never get any help. When I really want something, I go to the yellow pages or the internet or whatever, and I just say, hey, I need somebody to do whatever and it pays this much and it's a hell of a lot cheaper and have some department of. And I'm going, that's what I want government to be, you know, yellow page government. If I really want it that bad, I'll go buy it. You know, I'll pay for it. I'll negotiate. I'll do something. I'll move to wherever and whatever. We're not using coercion and 45s of people's heads to take cuts because they love me so much. You know, so this is what the mechanism by which that would be able to be done. And there's not some central banker planner somewhere getting a cut of it so they can go have some war. I'm just like, I understand the social implications of this. It is a change, a signpost in human history. I see it. And I can't believe the bad guys don't see it. And if they do, they got to position themselves different, do something or plan on, you know, reconstituting or whatever in a world kind of whatever the hell. I have no idea what they're going to do. But they don't go quietly into that good night. And we need warriors on the front lines, people like Roger Ver and Tux Avant, and Tux Avant's, you know, talented daughter. Thanks for the song. So this is, you know, we'll be checking with you guys in the future. You guys hold on. I want to talk to you a little bit. But I'm telling you, you know, they're not going to, big bad guys, they are not going to go quietly into that good night. I guarantee it. This is that much of a threat. We want to be part of it. We want to help. We were early adopters. I got it when, you know, back when they were under a dollar. You know, heck, only got a few, but man, damn, I wish I bought a whole bunch, you know, which is why we wanted to close the loop. When you can go cash or silver or gold to Bitcoin, Bitcoin back, it's over. Now it's just all the details mopping up around the flanks, and you need to get ready for this coming year, 13.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hello. Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult Jonathan. Time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines, And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Jonathan Logan, we're working on getting him on Skype. Is he there? Are you there, Jonathan?
I'm here.
There Hello. You go. Hello. Okay. We've been talking about Bitcoin and this and that and so on. And here we go in the next wave of. And, one of the things that I want to make sure that we focus on a little bit is I am of the opinion that, the big bad guys are not central plant. They are not going to, just let everybody start spending their own money the way they want and outside and they don't get a cut. That ain't happened. As far as I know, the European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve own half of the Bitcoins already for all we know. I mean, you don't know. Don't want to know, whatever. So I'm like, okay, so how would they kind of control something like this? Well, this is where you come in. They have the ability to what? They pass laws and you got to and make and have to and because. So what do? They say, you have to have a retina scan, thumbprint thing, kind of whatever to be able to even access the cafe, internet, daylight, ISP. It might as well be your social security number. Okay. So I'm going, all right. So the security, it's me that I'm the one doing it. Maybe I want them to know it's not me or it's not anybody or none of your damn business. So as a consultant for computer and communication privacy and security, Jonathan Logan, all right, we'll go ahead and get into more of your bio, but go ahead and address that. What do you see the future is going to be when it comes to internet security in your computers?
Well, the future looks, on the one hand, very bleak. On the other hand, it might be colorful and nice. It really depends on what we are doing in the future. It's not so much waiting for what the big bad guys do, but it's how we react to it and even how proactive we are in protecting our privacy, in protecting Bitcoin, and so on and so on. So it's not yet clear where we're going in the future when it comes to those subjects.
Well, this is what you work on, though. I mean, you want to have people that are able to communicate, use their computers, browse, and whatever, and nobody knows who they are. I mean, isn't that what your expertise is in?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not something that just falls out of the sky. Everybody has it. Everybody uses it. And it's not a magic bullet. It's, as you mentioned before, it's a constant war. And it's hard to predict how that war will be going. Right now, the war is not going into, or it's not in our favor, playing out in our favor. So it's hard to make a long-term prediction what's going to happen. But what is clear is that at least right now, we're pretty good in hiding and very good in anonymizing our traffic. But not enough people do it.
Okay, so now you have a business or a site called shadowlife.cc. Shadow Life. If I go to and make use of your services, what am I getting for? How am I doing it? Why would I go there?
Well, the shadowlife.cc website is mostly an educational website. In the last years, it appeared to us that there are very few people writing about privacy technology in any authoritative manner. There's a lot of false information out there. There's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt out there. So we got together with a few people from the industry and made it our personal challenge to produce good content and teach people about the background when it comes to privacy.
Okay. And should this go down to my 6-year-old child, grandchild, kid going in, the first thing they need is not how you get your first Facebook account, so every picture you take on your smartphone is owned by the man, and first thing we need to do is go to Shadow Life. You need to understand privacy from la beginning.
Exactly. That is exactly what it's about. Teaching people, especially about the background information you need to understand how privacy works and how privacy technology works, so you can make smart choices.
See, that's one thing, you know, the Bitcoin revolution I see coming. I mean, it's just the encryption of everything, the ability to, you know, be anonymous. I mean, just to build, that's why cash is such a threat to the state. And I'm going, okay, all right. I can see where wanting to be private has a lot of benefits, you know, for good, bad, whatever. I don't care. I'm, you know, I want the option as a good guy. I don't care what the bad guys do, because that's not going to infringe on me. It's always a, you know, few people do something, everybody must suffer kind of mentality, or that's a justification. Because if they don't have them going through their nodes, if they don't have everybody logging in, if they don't have the international passport for using the internet, then the man can't control it. And even if you're out in the open and you're using encryption like with Bitcoin, they may know that you use Bitcoin, but they don't know how much you did the what for getting what. So I'm going, okay. So this is, I can see the thousand cut death of the state coming. Is that what you're trying to be a part of? I mean, why are you wanting to do this? What is the motivation for you being anonymous on the internet?
Well, the death of the state is a good motivation, in my opinion. So, yeah, that's part of it. The other part is that with the digitization of the world, privacy is getting a new value. It's becoming much more of a commodity that needs to be protected, not just for the sake of political freedom, but also for the sake of making good choices. So it's really not just a question about politics. It's also a question about who do we want to be in the future? Do we want to be just a data set that is manipulated, or do we want to be free people with independent thought? So for us, privacy means two things. It's number one, of course, the aspect of being more independent from the state and from its minions. But the other aspect is really to rediscover what privacy gives to us when it comes to making good decisions, when it comes to being less influenced by other people, being less manipulated, and so on. So that is the bigger picture of privacy here.
Okay. I can see that big picture is definitely 180 degrees from the central command authority of picture. They got, hell no. We need to have your number, and every waking moment and breath you take and thing you do is, heck, we just turn on the microphone on your cell phone. We know what's going on. And we don't even have to be listening. We just archive everything in big giant database, de la whatever. And when you become a person of interest, we'll go back and check and say, aha, aha, ha, ha. And I tell you, you know, the first thing they're going to aha about is that you want to be encrypted. So, you know, when we come back, we'll get into more details of the benefits of this. But let's go into a little bit more about your background. I got here crypto anarchist. You can define what that means. You studied computer science and economics. And it says you've been with the military, you know, mostly logistics security, KRK. What does that mean?
KRK is the Crisis Reaction Forces. It's a unit in the German army that is sent out when trouble is near.
Okay, so are you in Germany now?
I'm currently in Germany, yes.
Okay, so from Germany, we were in Japan before Germany. See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. We're doing a radio show, you know, we got, you know, people in Las Vegas, Japan, Germany, talking about a worldwide phenomenon. That it is a change in attitude. Who is your authority? Who do you answer to? What happens when you are hardwired, even as young as you grow up, in an atmosphere of nobody? Well, somebody's not going to like that. Could it be Staten? We'll be right back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? This now voices can't be heard. Just want to scream it louder and louder and louder.
What the hell we fighting for?
Yeah! Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, all the way to Germany, where we're talking to Logan. Jonathan Logan. And, you know, he's in his late 30s. You know, he's, been around. He understands IT. He's got, let's put it this way. He's a consultant, for large corporations around Europe and U.S. and so on, saying, hey, yo, what's up? You want to be secret, right? You want to be able to, like, have a life. You want to be able to, portray us to, have a girlfriend. Nobody should have called Jonathan. All right? So there's, which could have been entirely possible if he had contacted you, right?
Well, it would have been a smarter move than just doing it via Gmail and relying on the Dropbox.
And who was this that did this? The head of the CIA. we're so screwed. We're all going to die. Did you look at what was it comical to you to see that play out?
Not so much comical, but it was interesting to see how the FBI got so motivated and so into it. We actually wrote an analysis on how they caught him. So it was an interesting case study.
Well, just tell us about it. What did we learn from that, and what advice would you have given? And let's get a dose of your expertise here.
The first thing you should never do is assume that you're private. The internet and most of our daily lives does not have any privacy protection built in. And to protect your privacy, to remain a little bit secret, to remain a little bit anonymous, you have to get technology working, and you have to have certain skills. And those skills are usually not what you find on a website or what the media tells you. It's not about just have a burner phone and throw it away. It's more about using good technology like anonymization technology to protect your communication end to end and not rely on something like Gmail that will spit out your data when asked kindly. So that is the first thing you start with. Don't rely on others to protect you.
Well, so how do you do it? Is there encryption? Go secure, push a button, and all of a sudden is there such a thing? Is there something you could that you couldn't thwart?
Yes, there are several things you can do right away. There are usually three things we tell people to do first without spending any money. Number one is enable the incognito mode in your browser so that cookies and stuff like that are not stored long term. The next thing you should do is use some kind of internet anonymization tool. For example, Tor or I2P or a couple of VPNs that are out there. And the third thing that you should do is you should end-to-end encrypt your communication wherever possible. And one of the methods for that, in the Petraeus case, it would have been PGP, pretty good privacy, or an open source variant of that, which is Open Privacy Guard. And you can use that to make sure that only the intended parties can read your communication.
If you put
those three things together, you actually are pretty secure already.
Well, let's think about this for a second. We have the head of the CIA, a former general, and all of a sudden he starts doing all kinds of anonymizing, encrypted, nobody gets to know kind of thing. Now you think the CIA would be going, what's up, Holmes? The top spy, they definitely want to know what the top spy is doing. And I'm wondering if just taking on this type of encryption lifestyle, that all of a sudden that puts you on the list right there. And not that I care. If you're going to be on a list, might as well be on top of the list with me. But, I'm just wondering what kind of action online brings you to the attention of the authorities.
I think that is a little bit an 80s mindset. That is that people think that they have to do anything to end up on the list. Today, you're on the list because you are. today, everything is collected for future reference. We're not talking about targeting single individuals anymore like we did in the 80s. Today, we're talking about targeting populations because it's much cheaper to record everything, to siphon off everything, than find out what the best target is and focus on that target. The target selection is far too expensive, so target everybody.
Yeah, I'm. You know, the thing that I can see is that with the video cameras they have on the highways, you know, the video cameras downtown, they have, you know, I remember, God, man, when it first started, we were looking at this just a few years ago. I mean, now they're everywhere here in Chicago, jumped all over this. But in the United Kingdom, I don't know, what was it, 4 million CCTVs? I mean, I'm going, wow, wow. There is a demonstration of the fear that governments and the central planners have of just people. And when you take those people and you start making them anonymous and you make their transactions anonymous, the mentality is this: if you're not in control, then you're out of control. And they are freaked out by out of control. And what you do as a business is you're going, look, man, you need to be out of their control, or certainly anonymous from, you know, what you're doing. That in and of itself, I would think, would be perceived as a threat to those that want to control.
Absolutely. Of course, they're not happy about anonymity. I mean, you just have to listen to mainstream media, and every few months we have some anonymity scare. You know, people can say whatever they want on the internet because they're anonymous. Most of the time, those scares are just false information. But what is true is that the powers to be don't have any interest in people being anonymous, because it breaks down their concept of you know, managing society. On the other hand, there is only so much they can do. They cannot really reveal themselves and say, you know, we're cutting all that privacy now, because there are people that do care, at least when their privacy is offensively threatened. There are a few countries where privacy technology is actually outlawed. China is a good example for that. It's kind of hard to be anonymous in China on the internet or on the street in the big cities. So what people do is they employ technology to hide that they're actually encrypting. They hide that they're actually anonymous. There are methods for essentially hiding your traffic and making sure that it doesn't stick out. So that is essentially the next step that is taken. And the battle between those that want to spy on everything and control everything and those that want to protect themselves, it's ongoing. So every time the privacy folks come up with a new technology, the bad guys want to break it, and vice versa.
When we come back, I want to ask Jonathan about Russia's top cyber sleuth foils U.S. spies, helps Kremlin pals. Bottom line, you know, XKGB super sleuth wants to have an internet passport for everybody, and we're already giving them hundreds of millions of computers access to him to check our computers for viruses. Putin's friend.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Logan. Now, the one thing I asked him before we went off is I wanted to know about the, you know, my levels here. I wanted to know about this cyber sleuth thing going on. Right, I read in, it was this summer, I was flying somewhere, and I think I picked up a Wired magazine. I'm reading this article. I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? You know, this is an amazing story, and it's exactly up the alley of our friend Jonathan Logan. Now, he encourages you to go to shadowlife.cc just to learn about how you should, perceive your non-identity on the internet, day law, whatever. I mean, you need to understand, you're teaching your kid, oh, this is how you create a Facebook account, and all their friends showing them. You know, it's kind of like, Kyle in South Park. He's like, you know, I don't want to be poking anybody or nothing. I'm good. You know, I don't need, no. Yeah. Now, what do they say? If you don't have a Facebook account, then you must be a terrorist. You know, I'm going, seriously? You know, so you're looking at, young children learning how to put their entire life, their favorite books, their most intimate thoughts, their favorite movies, all pictures of all their friends that, you know, facial recognition, by the way. And I go, wow, right in front of you. They'll go, oh, this looks like this person. You want to put this name up there? Of all the billions of people across the planet, we can tell this person is this. Really? Okay, I feel so much better now. So now let's go ahead and ask Jonathan. Go ahead and give us what you know about Kaspersky in Russia and his play and how you and he do battle philosophically on this.
Well, Kaspersky is one of those people that are really entrenched in what I call the cyber war propaganda. Kaspersky is running, or has been running, that company of the same name that sells antivirus products and does malware detection and stuff like that. So Kaspersky has for years now been one of the big loud voices that say cyber war is coming, we're all going to die. And he's one of the people that discovered Flame. He's one of the people that discovered Dooku. And he's pretty deep into the cyber war movement, actually.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and tell people what that is. Let's tell people what that is. What happened? There was a virus that was injected into the Iranian nuclear program that they, you know, weapon, whatever the hell. And he's going, hey, man, I recognize that we figured it out. This is an NSA, United States government attack on thing. So he outs them on that so he gets a lot of notoriety. Then he goes to Central America or whatever just this last year advocating all these different countries saying every single human being on the planet must have an internet passport ID bio encrypted and kind of eye scan fingerprint something to even use the internet. This is what he's advocating, right?
It's one of the many things he's advocating, but he's not alone in advocating that. There have been memos by the UN advocating it. There have been press releases by Microsoft advocating that. There have been US senators advocating that. So it's actually something that is a meme out there, and it comes up every few years again, telling people, okay, to go online, you have to have either a certificate for your computer that proves that you're computer is clean and safe and no bad stuff on it, or you need an electronic identity card that identifies you to everybody else on the internet. And the problem with all those schemes is that they're actually smoke. There is already nothing like anonymity on the internet per default. When you go online, your ISP already knows who you are and what IP address, the address you use on the internet, you have. And there are automatic APIs, methods to request the identity information for an internet address that already exists, and that exists almost every place on the internet, on the world. And what the internet passport really would do is it would circumvent the need to ask the ISP and would give everybody who has access to the passport system access to the identity information without telling the ISP that you're looking into something or someone. So that is the only big change. And there have been multiple proposals like that by multiple parties. And it's not really just Kaspersky and his ex-FSB connections. It's more or less a global meme that's going on.
Okay, so when you say FSB connections, you're talking the KGB or former CS,
yes,
police of Rut de la shiny badges, okay? So I'm going, all right, tell us about his capacity. One thing that I found fascinating is there's hundreds of millions of computers that go through his servers checking for malware using PCs. You know, anybody has a PC, you know, Microsoft, whatever, he's got access to all of these computers, true or false?
Not totally true. What is true is that a lot of people, millions of people, are using products of his, which means they install software that comes from his company, from Kaspersky, to do virus checking and so on and so on. And of course, if he would put some kind of a Trojan into that software, then people would install that Trojan. That is true. But right now, what they have on the whole internet, and most internet most antivirus companies have that, they have so-called sensor systems or honeypots on the internet, which are essentially computers that pretend to be normal PCs and that invite malware and viruses in, so that the antivirus company gets a glimpse on what is going out going on outside of their premises.
See, my problem is whenever you have these kinds of things as an individual and you sign up for different products, it's like the South Park human centipad. I mean, you know, the episode where they're, you know, you click, I agree. I mean, how many times do I got to have all of these upgrades to everything? Nope, I got to go read it again. And then all of a sudden you find out Instagram's taking all your pictures, selling them to whatever, and Facebook, and doing, you're done. You know, and I'm going, this is, I agree. Do we really got to, you know, what's the solution? Well, if you're anonymous, you know, really a lot of that stuff doesn't matter. Well, of course, it's your computer. But then they're going to be, you know, like these Google Books. You know, you have these computers that really are just an interface with the cloud. You know, so and what about, you know, this whole idea of parsing up bits of information to where it's just out in the cloud out there? Is that any kind of a benefit to us, or is it just easy, got your number and shut you off there too?
I think that the cloud is one of the most dangerous developments for privacy that we saw over the last years, combined with biometrics. So giving up your data to some entities in another jurisdiction that you cannot control and there is no way to control them, is just a bad idea. It makes sense to have backups in the cloud, but you should encrypt them before you send them to the cloud. But what does make absolutely no sense is to have all your stuff unencrypted on the cloud, open for everybody to get with a friendly asking or a national security letter or a subpoena. It's very easy to get access to the data. And there's no way of you being able to tell that there was access to your data, which is different from your own computer. If your own computer is hacked, you might not notice, but that is not that trivial. If your computer is stolen by the government, you might notice. So the cloud is more or less nothing else but giving some entity all your data and giving up control.
You know, when we come back, you know, Jonathan's got a beat on this thing. This is what he does for large companies and individuals that need. You know, Petraeus should have called him. I said, yo, what's up? How do I do this? Well, you want to know, you go to shadowlife.cc. Shadowlife.cc. We're back to Germany with Jonathan Logan. Just a little bit, we come back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star, leaping through the sky. A tiger defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racer.
Dude, a couple other laws if we can get away with it. You know, there's always, you make enough laws, everybody's a criminal. You know, I'm sure there's a, you know, we're breaking law right now somewhere for something. You know, it's like, you know, Barry Hass, a good friend, he always says, you know, I'm sick of this feeling that I gotta turn myself in. I just don't know to whom or for what. You know, okay. Well, you know, maybe Jonathan kind of knows, you know, well, who they want you to turn yourself in. You know, they'll make up what. You know, this is, we need to talk about in this last segment real quick, you know, like, you know, biometrics, you know, how face scanning is going to come in. It's like Minority Report. You can't go anywhere without them. They already been doing, we knew this, God, what was it, you know, 6 years ago or more at Super Bowls, they're going in, they're scanning everybody. You know, I mean, and it blip, 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 blip. It's just speed. You know, more computers. What, you think DARPA doesn't have enough money? You know, Bitcoin traceability. I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, and the near future controls. They're going to try and, we rule you. We control. We can't. Because if you're not in control, you're out of control. And they, and I wanted to ask Jonathan, before we get into these other things we want to talk about, is there is a philosophy that we're up against. There is something, you know, there's they, them, those that, you know, how do you know who they, them, those are? They're the ones that won't leave you alone. I just want to be left alone. They won't leave me alone. Why?
Well, there are many reasons for that. One of the big reasons, of course, is that with control over others comes profit. You can make others do your will. And That is part of it, and that's probably part for a lot of people. There's another problem, that is that people are really used to the notion that you need government for having order. And there are actually people that believe that if you do not control to the death everybody, then the society will lose order, we will have chaos, and we will have people slitting each other's throats. And there's another point, and that is that people do think that in the future they can have much more power through technology. And some people are just power hungry. I mean, they want control out of the lust for power. And lastly, as soon as you have an institution that does control, that institution doesn't want to go away. So it has to invent new threats, new justifications for it being there. So if you put that all together, and it might not be the single individual in one of those bureaucracies that subscribes to every one of those motives, but in combination, I think they describe a lot of what is going on in governments, but also what's going on in many companies that are in the game of control.
Well, that's their end-all, be-all, because they think it benefits them in some way because they can, okay? This is, you know, if you're not in control, you're out of control, and if you're out of control, I can't, you know, fleece you. You know, I don't get enough goody from you. And there's a lot of methods and mechanisms that they use to do this, and I think that is Bitcoin something that just kind of slipped past them, something they couldn't do? The more they emphasize any kind of control on it, it gets worse. Are they just buying up a bunch of Bitcoin and, you know, central banks are sitting over and going, go, let it go, man. We'll make a bunch of money on this one, too. I mean, you know what? I mean, what's going on with that? I would see that as a major threat to all that is holy, you know, and or unholy. You know, these guys, I'm going, I don't understand how it is that they're going to approach individuals being able to spend anonymously whatever they want with other people that take that as, you know, value for value in transactions. They can't let this go.
Well, I do actually think that Bitcoin is not as bad for some institutions as it might sound. Number one, while Bitcoin might be anonymous by itself, you don't have to write your name next to a transaction, it's not untraceable. Every Bitcoin transaction is visible on the blockchain. Everybody can see that. And there have been analyses against that, finding out who holds how many Bitcoins, especially if one of those Bitcoin addresses gets connected to an identity. And that happens all the time. It happens when you're using an exchanger. It happens if you pay on a website that requires your name and your Bitcoin address or a payment from Bitcoin. It also happens by just using Bitcoin. It's actually not hard to trace transactions on the Bitcoin network to the IP that first introduces it to the network and thus to the person controlling those Bitcoins. So it's not as anonymous. It's traceable and it can be linked.
Okay, is that value, the amount of it, or just that there was a Bitcoin transaction?
Both. You can link the amount, you can find out what addresses someone is using and how much money is on those addresses.
Well, maybe you can, so, I can't, but that means that the government can.
Well, everybody can with statistical knowledge.
Right.
And there have been public papers of people, universities, and so on doing that. So that is doable. There are ways to defend against that. So there's stuff like Bitcoin laundry that essentially disconnect your transactions from each other. So it makes your Bitcoins anonymous again. But you have to do that yourself. It's nothing that Bitcoin does for you. And the other thing with Bitcoin is, I think Bitcoin is currently almost popular with certain parts of the elites because it sticks it to the banks. And there's a conflict going on between some governments that want to defend the primacy of politics versus the banks that want to defend the primacy of the banks over politics. So Bitcoin, for them, is probably something like a wager that you can use. And there has been some sympathy by some government people towards Bitcoin, because what Bitcoin does, it takes power from the banks, not from the government.
No, I've seen this before. It was called Saddam Hussein saying, screw you, we're taking euros. Okay, yeah, screw you. Here's a hellfire-guided freaking FU missile. I mean, you know, these guys don't play nice. They, you know, when they start seeing it slipping through their fingers, which I'm seeing the entire philosophical house of cards on just the idea that we as individuals must be ruled by somebody. It's like, you know, the fact that we rule ourselves doesn't even apply. Oh, no, he pulled this sword from a rock, so he's your ruler, saith the Pope or something. I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? And this is just representative of all of the power that goes down to the individual, and that's where you come in, because the mechanism by which you would do this is being able to communicate and transact and live your life without having to be categorized and, you know, put into different boxes. And if you're a threat, then all of a sudden you get your button pushed and you're a person of interest, and they go back and track every single freaking thing you ever did because they got an archive somewhere and they build a case to whatever they want to do. So that's where shadowlife.cc comes in. You know, tell people the importance of understanding what it is that you do. Why are you there? What's the important thing that you bring to all this?
Well, without privacy, you cannot be independent. Without privacy, you are losing your hold on making good decisions, to be independent, and to be not controlled by someone else. So privacy is one of the building stones, one of the key things for liberty today and in the future. And what we do with Shadow Life, we try to teach you how to understand privacy, how to make good privacy decisions, and how to apply certain technologies and methods to increase your privacy and thus your liberty.
Now, is there a product that you sell? Are you just doing this out of the goodness of your heart? Is there, you know, something benefit you get to helping us? I mean, what?
Well, there are, of course, a few people that come through the website to us and ask for consulting. But the website itself is free and doesn't sell anything right now.
Okay. So if I go to shadowlife.cc, I'm going to, you know, start me off. This is stuff I need to be teaching my grandkids. Because I got four grandkids. The oldest is 3 years old. I get, for Christmas, she got some kind of a PDA Barbie, I get to be lobotomized, computer-friendly, Facebook inner crap. You know? I mean, at 3 years old, I can already see where this is going. Oh, put in picture of mom, do this, do that. And I'm going, yep, they're just training them into, you know, and what the first thing they need to know, look, Kaylee baby, you need to understand shadowlife.cc, right?
Exactly.
Now it starts at La Beginning. And do you have a segment there for young children, or how to introduce children to this, or start them in the mindset?
No, not yet.
You know, I vote that, man. This is, it needs to start early on. I saw it coming with Facebook. I mean, with MySpace, my kids all on there. But I saw a lot of things happen. I saw how individuals that are not programmed by some machine, that their favorite music list could include Tchaikovsky's Ninth Symphony or something. You know, I got hip-hop right alongside classic rock and roll. When you take them out of being programmed, the human mind is free to express itself in so many ways. It's happening right, not later. And you need to understand how to, at least if you want to, maintain your anonymity. Shadowlife.cc.